Lately, I've been using a new product that I really like. It's called Superbeads. It's based on Nobel Prize winning research and the nitric oxide principle. Nitrates are converted to nitric oxide in the body, which is the secret to Superbeads' activity. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeads.com. That's 800-738-2198, intelligentbeads.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today, very important subject. We're talking about GMOs, the use of glyphosate, the chemical ingredient in Roundup, and its effect on human health with Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who's a research scientist at MIT, who has taken on statins in the past. We'll have a few minutes to discuss that in part two today. But we're focusing now on the effects of glyphosate on the gastrointestinal tract, on the microbiome, which increasingly we're recognizing is responsible for our health in so many different ways. So what's the deal, Dr. Seneff?
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. And I had mentioned manganese in the first segment, and it turns out that lactobacillus, which are the microbes that are really important to get a foothold in the early life. When you're first born, you know, you're drinking milk, lactate, right, lactose, lactobacillus, they use milk for fuel, and they grow and flourish, and they choke out the bad bacteria, the pathogens. So if they can't grow well, the pathogens have a chance to catch hold. And I think that's what's happening, is that the infant is picking up glyphosate in the breast milk or in the soy milk, of course, especially the soy milk if they're drinking soy formula. And and that's killing the lactobacillus because it's depriving them of manganese. They have especially high need for manganese for detoxification of their oxidative reactions. And so, and low lactobacillus is actually linked to anxiety. In fact, they treat anxiety. They've shown that lactobacillus supplements, you know, these probiotics, can actually help to alleviate anxiety. Mm-hmm. So there's a connection between
it's the gut-brain connection. The gut-brain connection.
Right. Yeah. Very, very interesting, intricate connection between the gut microbiome and the brain. And in fact, I think the gut microbes are really in charge of maintaining our good health. It's remarkable how many things they do. They make a lot of essential nutrients for us. One of the things they make that's really, really important is these aromatic amino acids, the set of three amino acids that are essential. They're called essential because our cells can't make those amino acids, the phenylalanine, tryptophan, and tyrosine. These amino acids are really, really important. And our gut microbes make them for us using a pathway called the shikimate pathway. And that's a biological pathway. And glyphosate is known to kill plants by disrupting the shikimate pathway. Hmm. So it's a no-brainer to imagine it would disrupt the shikimate pathway in the microbes as well, which is going to cause a deficiency in these aromatic amino acids. And if you say then, okay, let's hypothesize there is a deficiency, and then you look at predict what the consequences would be, you start to see a lot of things that are actually going on today.
They're the building blocks for neurotransmitters.
Exactly so. Serotonin, melanin, the skin tanning agent, thyroid hormone, dopamine, all of those things are derived from these aromatic amino acids.
Well, you really are great at pulling in various aspects of biochemistry. I can see why, you know, you're sort of at the point of this critique of GMOs, because you're very erudite about pulling all these associations together.
Right, and so and serotonin, dopamine, and serotonin are both, and melatonin, all of them are implicated in autism, and they really see disruption in those in the metabolic, you know, homeostasis of those critical neurotransmitters in the brain in association with autism. And autism is associated with sleep disorder. Sleep disorder is a consequence of insufficient melatonin, which would make sense if you don't have enough precursor protein to make the melatonin.
Right. It's a tyrosine that gets made in the pineal into melatonin.
You're right. Yep.
Okay. And, that much I remember from med school. You seem to be a little bit better at it than I am.
Yeah. And, you know, sleep disorder is a huge epidemic today, also going up in step with glyphosate usage on corn and soy crops. Really good match. And it's also linked to all these, you know, neurological diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and depression. All of those are linked to sleep disorder issues, schizophrenia, you know.
Well,
I think the pineal gland is really getting hit hard.
Yeah, well, also the, you know, light, excess artificial light obviously suppresses melatonin production. That's another factor in modern civilization. But, you know, a concern has been raised about the possibility that there could be gene jumping between the genes in the genetically modified organisms. You know, you swallow these things and they say, oh, you digest everything and there's not going to be a problem. But there could be bacterial translocation, that the bacteria could themselves take on some of the traits of the GMOs, and that the bacteria could thereby begin to elaborate toxins. This is a different issue than glyphosate. This is when they use
bees. That's the BT toxin.
The BT.
I've heard that argument.
Could you share?
I don't know that it's been proven, but it makes sense that it could.
Could you elaborate on that? Because that's a different type of GMO. But they use.
It is.
It's like a built-in herbicide pesticide that is genetically engineered into the plant, so that the plant makes this BT toxin. But is it possible that the ability to make BT toxin is transferred to bacteria in the intestine, and then the intestines become a factory for BT toxin?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that argument as well, and I don't think it's been proven. It's like my other arguments, that it makes sense it could happen because bacteria do share genes, and you might imagine that a gene that's been shotgunned in is a pretty vulnerable gene for cutting loose as well. So it would make sense to me. It's a plausible argument that it could be happening. As far as I know, it hasn't been proven, but it would make sense also to contribute to the inflamed gut. And in fact, you know, Judy Carmen and I just did a tour in Hawaii where we gave back-to-back talks together. She talked about the GMOs and I talked about the glyphosate. And she's an expert. She wrote a paper on pigs exposed to GMO feed and showed that they had incredibly inflamed stomachs. They opened up their stomachs. You know about that paper?
That has been, you know, that paper has been super controversial, and some people have said, you know, even accused the authors of scientific fraud, but nonetheless,
I mean, that's the game they play, right? Yeah. I mean, these guys attack you pretty viciously. That's, of course, why people don't go into this field. They don't want their reputation ruined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the young people don't dare. Most of the people who are doing it are close to retirement age or past retirement mm-hmm. age, which is really ridiculous with something this important in our health, that we're just letting it, ignoring it. And most people are ignoring it. Even the researchers who could be doing the research are not daring to do it because they think they'll get clobbered by all these, you know, people who are paid really to make sure that our work gets discredited whatever way they can.
It's a closed and incestuous world, you know, with academic grants and faculty positions and...
I know, all the ag schools are controlled by, I mean, they just basically fund all the research and make sure they don't do the research that ought to be done.
You know,
because it's going to hurt their bottom line in terms of their wealth, which, of course, they have an abundance of it, so they can go ahead and control with that money, no problem. We're in a really bad situation.
Indeed.
And we need to really figure out how to get out of this jam. And I don't know the answer, but we need to figure that out.
Well, I hope that...
Anyway, Judy, so she said, and so in her talk, she always said BT. She really suspects it's the BT that's causing this inflamed gut. And, of course, BT does, in fact, blow up the gut of the bugs that eat it. So you might imagine that it could affect the gut of the cows as well. The industry argues not. They argue that it, and it's just like they say, oh, it's the shikimate pathway. It's only in the plants. It's not in the humans. Therefore, no problem. They make the same argument about BT. They say, oh, it affects the guts of these bugs in a different way. And we don't have that. And therefore,
I think the expression is, they say it works only in non-mammalian species. That there's somehow a firewall between, you know, insects and humans. And, dogs, cats, humans, not going to be a problem.
I think it's a juicy argument. They're not really, I mean, I feel like they haven't substantiated these arguments adequately. And it's fascinating to me that the burden ought to be on them to prove that it's safe rather than on us to prove that it's not safe.
Exactly. When you're introducing a new technology, you know, it's not like, you know, we're going to pass the bill and then we're going to find out what's in the bill. We really need to explore the technology before we unleash it. Unfortunately, it has been unleashed.
We're way too cavalier. Yeah. And, you know, the siRNA is the other one I'm really worried about, and that's being introduced now. They're really excited about it. I think there was just a brand new article on it. This is great. You just put this siRNA on there, and that's a regulator molecule, and it's actually pretty stable, so it's quite possible, quite likely even, that it will survive the gut.
What is it?
And it regulates the proteins of the bugs and kills them through misregulating their proteins.
Okay, so this is yet another pathway for killing bugs. This is another gene modification that's being used to kill bugs.
Yeah, it's a fancy way to kill bugs. It's a totally different kind of GMO game.
Okay.
Where you can even just put the siRNA itself on the plant, as I understand it. And mm-hmm. then the bug eats the siRNA that's
I
on
see.
The plant. And, of course, you do, too. So who knows what it's going to do to us.
Right.
But those things are very high-level regulatory agents that can cause all
right.
kinds of weird stuff to
so,
happen.
So let me give our listeners a little science primer, okay, on this, because, you know, we're way ahead of them on this. RNA is the substance that the body uses. It's ribonucleic acid. It's what translates the DNA in your chromosomes into proteins. And if there are ways that you can use RNA to, in fact, this is actually the basis of AIDS drugs. They are, you know, modulate the expression of viral RNA. In effect, what you're doing is you're bollocksing up the works of the DNA of the bugs, of the pests, of the insects. But how do you know that that RNA can't possibly cross-react with human DNA translation? That's a little scary.
What it is actually is not a coding gene. This RNA doesn't code for a protein. It's really, really interesting and very important regulatory coding, and the RNA actually acts as a signaling molecule to cause the cell to totally change the way it's doing business, increase the production of this protein, decrease the production of that protein. You know, it really messes things up in such a way as to kill the bug. And so these kinds of RNAs have a lot of cross-species communication. These things are really fancy and very high level, and they're cross-species. And so I cannot imagine that it doesn't do something absolutely bizarre to our cells as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't understand why the government thinks, oh, yeah, that's fine, no problem, let's just go ahead and do this. I mean, there's a complete recklessness in this field.
Coming soon to a supermarket near you. Coming soon to a supermarket near you, right?
I know. It's just amazing. They just say, oh, yeah, fine, no problem, put that there, too. You know, we've got the siRNA now on top of the double resistance to both dicamba and glyphosate, or to both 2,4-D and glyphosate. We're going to get all this toxic soup into our food. I think I'm probably right that autism is going to be 80% of the boys born in 2032. You know, I mean, we have no change in this direction. We're just making it worse and worse every year.
Scary stuff.
Clearly, without regard to the health of our children.
Can we briefly switch gears? I know it's going to be really hard for you to encapsulate some of your concerns about statin drugs in the remaining 5 minutes, but give it a try, because and maybe we'll invite you back for yet another session.
I could do another 40 minutes on statins. No
absolutely,
problem,
right? And maybe we could just do this as a little bit of a preview of that, because you've been very outspoken and articulate about your concerns about statins. But what's the deal?
Right, I have some new information about statins.
And
just came in recently.
Fine. Maybe we'll do a reprise, but what's your basic argument?
Well, okay, I think statins are toxic. I think there's no one who should be taking them. I think it's basically a poison, and it erodes your health slowly over long term, much like glyphosate. And they work synergistically. So if you're getting exposed to both glyphosate and statins, you can pretty much guarantee you're going to have muscle pain, muscle weakness, brain fog, memory problems, and then going on to worse, like prostate cancer and kidney failure. I mean, all this stuff, liver failure, this is all going to be, and heart failure. I mean, I think statins cause heart failure. They cause the plaque, they supposedly stabilize the plaque, and they do two things. They prevent the macrophages from going into the plaque to become
mm-hmm.
foam cells, which
right.
is where you store the cholesterol
right.
and fat, and they cause the plaque to get calcified. They're probably related.
Mm-hmm.
But calcification is a very strong risk factor for heart disease. It's much stronger than the high LDL, which is the thing they're treating you for. So statins bring you to a point where you have a increased risk of a much stronger risk factor for heart disease than you would with the LDL, with the high LDL, with the calcification. The new paper that's just come out, really fascinating, and it explains so much, because it shows that statins mess up mesenchymal stem cells,
yes.
Really cells.
Share that with us, because I just introduced my audience to that concept, but perhaps you can articulate it better than I did.
Right, yeah, mesenchymal stem cells are so important, and they're precursors to macrophages, which are the war against the pathogen. So, first of all, it's going to make you more susceptible to infection, more susceptible to sepsis, for example, which we have a huge problem with sepsis these days. But also, the macrophages are needed to go into the plaque to store the cholesterol. And that's where you might say that's the beneficial effect of statins. Not that they lower LDL, but that
mm-hmm.
they prevent those macrophages from going into the plaque.
Right.
Because they prevent macrophages from existing. But you know what? You need macrophages. They're really important.
Yeah.
Even for cleaning up the mess of cells that die. Meanwhile, statins destroy muscle cells, and the macrophages can't clean up the mess. So you get muscle debris, getting into the blood and causing rhabdomyolysis, which will lead to kidney failure, because you've got these myoglobin, damaged myoglobin from busted muscle cells getting into the kidneys and gumming them up and causing kidney failure. And, of course, the liver is super stressed by statins and by glyphosate. And we've got an epidemic in hepatitis and cirrhosis and liver cancer, all these problems. Of course, fatty liver. Fatty liver is like 25% of the population these days. Directly a consequence of glyphosate, and I could go into that, but glyphosate, I think, I'm almost certain glyphosate's causing the fatty liver epidemic, and statins are making it worse.
Indeed. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? What can people do to become more aware of these issues? You've got a website, right?
Yes, I do. People, P-E-O-P-L-E, dot CSAIL, Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, C-S-A-I-L, dot M-I-T, dot E-D-U, slash Seneff, S-E-N-E-F-F, and I've just posted some of my papers and some blog posts and some talks. I have a lot of slides there from various talks that I've given, also some radio interviews like this one.
And just Googling your name.
Stuff I've done.
Googling your name will also get it, S-E-N-E-F-F.
I don't have everything there.
Right.
You'll get various radio interviews and TV interviews and whatnot, YouTube videos. I've got a lot of stuff. My name is pretty rare, so if you just remember S-E-N-E-F-F, you can Google that, and you'll find a bunch of stuff.
Good stuff.
On both glyphosate and statin drugs.
And what about some reliable resources for people concerned about GMOs? Do you believe that any of the websites capture this?
Stephen Drucker's book, which is called, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, and it's, I think,
wonderful
that you
book. I read it cover to cover. Really good.
I think you posted a picture
really
of it on your website.
It's about the situation with the GMOs, because there's very poor regulation,
indeed,
regulatory control over the GMOs themselves, and he focuses on that. He touches a little bit on the chemicals like glyphosate, but mostly he's about the dangers of GMOs and the inadequate testing and how we've rushed it out and how we, all that, the political aspects of inadequate regulation of GMOs. Really good book.
Well, you know, at some point or another, you know, you may have felt like I'm like leading the charge, and you know, whoever leads the charge gets arrows in their back. But I think you might be encouraged and emboldened by the fact that you've got a mainstream medical journal, not necessarily endorsing, but publishing a very significant article that critiques GMOs, herbicides, and calls attention to the issue of GMO labeling and the need for more research on GMOs at the very least before we plunge headlong into adoption of these practices. So, you know, I admire your courage and your outspoken position on this, because, you know, it ain't easy, and you're in a major institution where it's, you're high profile, and you're going to catch a lot of flack for saying what you're saying. But I think it's important.
But that just shows you why others are afraid to do it. You know, people have to have courage, and I understand young people. You know, they've got families to feed. They don't want to lose their job. You know, they can't get their funding renewed. It's not easy.
And I think what you're doing is, you're at the very least, you know, whether or not you're 100% right on every single aspect of this, you're generating some very important hypotheses that need to be investigated in a proper scientific way. And we need to be reassured that some of these dire predictions aren't going to come to pass, because lest we find ourselves in a very, very scary place a few decades hence.
Right. And, of course, we've got runaway healthcare costs in this country, and so many people have all kinds of chronic diseases. We're paying a huge price. You know, people just, my message to the individual is go organic. You can buy, fortunately, U.S. certified organic food. We try 100% of the time. We try to buy organic spices. We buy only organic beer, organic wine. I mean, everything is organic in this household. Mm-hmm. And in fact, my husband's the cook in the family, and he's been making his own croutons just to make sure he can use organic bread and everything organic in the product, instead of buying the boxed croutons.
This reminds me, because one other topic I want you to touch on is, because you have some very interesting things to say about celiac disease and gluten intolerance. All of a sudden, you know, it's like a big fad.
Yes.
Everybody's going gluten-free. Everybody claims they got a bad reaction to gluten. Celiac disease statistics going through the roof. What's up with that?
I think it's glyphosate. I mean, it's very clear to me that it corresponds to the increased use of glyphosate at the harvest time, right before the harvest, to kill the weed. You know, weed is not GMO Roundup Ready, but they use glyphosate actually as a desiccant, and it works apparently very well. And all the farmers, as more farmers use it, they're very happy with it. They tell their neighbors. More and more farmers are adopting this practice, and we're getting more and more glyphosate.
It dries out the wheat. It makes it more easy to separate the wheat from the chaff, right?
Right. It also gets a head start on next year's weeds. You know, you can kill the ryegrass before mm-hmm. you've even harvested the crop, and you don't have to do another application after the crop is cleared. It makes it easier for the combine. I mean, lots of good features. Of course, unfortunately, it's going to dump the glyphosate right into the product, and all of a sudden we've got this celiac disease epidemic. I mean, even it's amazing how quickly that sprung up and how quickly the grocery stores almost had to have a section that's gluten-free. You know,
yep.
Now we're used to it. That didn't exist even 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing. And it's like all of a sudden, oh, yeah, I'm allergic to wheat. I mean, it's like everyone thinks, oh, yeah, of course, wheat's terrible. You know, when did wheat get bad? Wheat is a good food, you know? It's a healthy food.
But you wouldn't know it today because
the glyphosate's ruined it.
Glyphosate changes the way that the gut handles the wheat.
It gets in the way. I mean, we talk about it in our paper. Anthony and I have a long paper on gluten intolerance. And again, we did the same thing. We went through all the research literature, did the arguments, connect the dots, you know, and we have a tremendous amount of circumstantial evidence linking glyphosate to gluten intolerance and specifically the features of celiac disease. Celiac disease, like autism, is a complex disease with a lot of comorbidities. We go into each one and show how glyphosate could explain it in
okay.
that paper.
Great stuff, as usual, Dr. Seneff. Thank you very much for joining us today, and much luck to you in continuing to be a very, very outspoken voice for safety in the pharmaceutical industry, in the biotech industry. I think we really need to reexamine some of our hallowed traditions and practices.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.